extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ah, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. From the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss. Big show today. We're back on the MLS beat after three straight USMNT Canada national team shows. Octagonal three-day match day is over.
You know how good it
MLS
feels?
MLS transfer news
where
rolling along.
We come out of a show where we're talking about the World Cup and what Alphonso Davies and Weston McKennie can do on a world stage. And we come into a meeting the next morning and we just say, who's the next Brian White? And you're scrolling through rosters and you're talking about hard-running center forwards who are buried on depth charts in MLS, and that makes the heart grow fond.
Ah, that's our bread and butter. We have so much to talk about. We've missed so much focusing on the international game. Alan Velasco to Dallas, that's a done deal. That's a record transfer. DeAndre Yedlin, no, he's not going to the Champo. He's going to Inter Miami. That was the case the whole time. Austin Trusty to Arsenal. George Bello gets his wish. Douglas Costa is going to the Galaxy per Tom Bogart. And now Fabrizio Romano. The Red Bulls say no to Aaron Long trade offers. We have got some previews to do today. Atlanta United. Gonzalo Pineda is going to stop by to talk about Joseph Martinez. Can he be the Joseph from 2017 to 19? What will happen with that third DP spot? We're also going to preview Minnesota United and Austin FC. We're going to rank our top five defensive midfielders. A lot of debate about this one, and then go right into the mailbag. All right, let's do it. You guys ready? I'm feeling good. I'm feeling warm. I'm literally indoors wearing a beanie with a blanket on my lap with a space heater. I would not have survived in Minnesota. This is how we're doing the show today. How you feeling? Doyle, what's up, man? We heard from Dave. We haven't heard from you. Just trying to get some energy flowing. Mm-hmm. How you doing?
I'm good. You know, I'm still in preseason energy mode and preseason pronunciation mode, very clearly.
This is
right
Tucson
there.
Doyle. Everyone knows
yeah,
that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I just watched Julian Carranza score a goal with the Union. So, you know, got the juices flowing a little bit. But yeah, I'm easing into it. I'm still easing into 2022.
Doyle, because Wiebe just did the intro and I didn't think about it until this moment. Mm-hmm. What's your level of excitement, or what's your over-under, actually? Let's do over-under on the amount of times Wiebe uses the word father in discussing Joseph Martinez in the upcoming Atlanta United preview. I'll set the line at 5.5.
Oh, I'm going to hit the under. Wiebe 2022 is much more economical. It's not about quantity. It's about the quality of his references to fatherhood. That's what
that's
I'm going
never, yeah. And look, that's an important tenet of fatherhood overall.
But,
you know, quantity is overrated. Quality with your children and the people, you know, the community that's raising them. That's really what it's all about. By the way, you know, this is the preseason headline that might not mean jack. We're going to do this every show until the season starts. You stole it. Julian Carranza, 2 minutes in. And then Sergio Santos got hurt for the Union. So, huge season for Julian Carranza. Massive season. What do you think? Yes? No? Maybe? We can hope for it?
I mean, let's see how the rest of preseason plays out. But, like, it would feel like a very Union thing to pick this guy up basically off the scrap heap. He's a $6 million signing a few years ago. He's a guy who'd spent time with the Argentinian national team, or youth national team. Like, the Union can't afford to, you know, get talent like this basically any other way. And they found a way with this kid. And then we know what their track record is with regards to developing young players. So it wouldn't be shocking, but I need to see more than one goal against FC Cincinnati in preseason before, you know, starting to predict 15 goals.
I didn't realize it was against Cincinnati.
Yeah,
I take it all back.
Yeah,
Julian Carranza's in for a rough one.
Yeah.
I don't know, you guys. Sure. Cincinnati grinded out a really nice result against University of South Florida last week.
So they're against the Bulls.
Yeah, they're really turning a corner.
A lot of good talent came out of South Florida. You know, you got to look back in the sands of time for that. Hey, Alan Velasco at FC Dallas is done. It's a record signing. Dan Hunt is very excited about it. A lot of tweets from Dallas about spending that peppy cash. What do we think about this move? And what do you think about Dallas overall? When I look at their depth chart, and that's the time of the year that we're in right now, where you look at depth charts and you try to conjure up some sort of emotion, I get a little bit excited. Like, it could be a lot of fun. They've got some really talented young players. And then you add Paul Areola to the mix. You're going to see Ferreira as the nine, I assume. this could be fun. And Alan Velasco could be a huge signing for them.
Yeah, I mean, he is the biggest signing that that FC Dallas has ever made, just in terms of profile, and certainly in terms of budget as well. They teased it on Twitter. They're like, we're going to spend some of that Pepe cash. And then they really, really did. But it's, you know, it's kind of like the David Goss theorem. He's 19 years old. It would not shock me at all if it took him a year to get used to things in MLS. They're a very young team. They're a brand new head coach. And that defense last year was rickety. So I'm excited to see Dallas because they have a lot of players that I like. But, Dallas has a ways to go before I think we should start talking about them as a potential playoff team. Like they need to check some boxes early in the year before the hype train gets off the rail, so to speak.
I've said this a couple times on the show. I think what Dallas is doing at the academy level is great. I think that this was a golden generation. This wasn't a consistent pipeline of players that are going to come out at the level of a Pepe, Brian Reynolds, Reggie Cannon. And so this is the other step of being a club like that is, well, then sometimes you have to go sign a young player who you can then sell on. And so this is in two hands. I think this is a guy that you expect to produce for Dallas over the next 2-3 years, but there is an eye to, he can then help us transfer that Pepe money even farther down the road. And so I think that's part of the evolution of this league. And it's a smart move from Dallas. And you don't have to start him now. I think Shobley Schoen is a talented player. If Paxton Pomykal's healthy, you've got more pieces in there. And so I think he can have some time to sort of come along.
I think it would be a little bit shocking if he wasn't a starter by at least midseason.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I really like about Nico Estevez and his background is the youth development side of things. He's been really tuned in. That's been sort of like the bread and butter for him. So you have to think in scouting and signing Alan Velasco, there's a little bit of like a, you know, it's almost like Fabian Castillo with a bunch more money involved, right? Like Fabian Castillo was the same concept. They bought him. He became a best 11 player. They sold him on. But this is at that level, except you're adding, I don't know, $5-7 million to that. And you hope on the back end as well. The place for MLS to, I think, make big jumps in the next couple of years is not just these homegrown signings, these super draft picks that have been sold for millions of dollars. We talked about that over and over and over. There remains a gap with international signings, U22 signings, taking those signings and turning them into productive MLS players and then selling them for a big profit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the whole point, right?
Yeah.
Is that you want to get something out of them in the league, but in the long run, this is an investment. Investments have to pay off at some point, not just in on-the-field production, off the field as well. Velasco has the profile. He's already got the, you know, like, transfer market numbers are what they are, but he quote-unquote is the second most valuable player in MLS. There's already some sort of market around him, or at least the belief that there will be. Dallas got in quick. Let's see if they can turn that into more money down the line. And more importantly for FC Dallas fans, into results in the shorter term. TBD on that. Erkin Card, Orlando City.
Wait, hold on a sec. There's breaking news that I have to put out there into the world. David Goss, you should know, Bajang Darboh is starting the second half for the Union.
What is he, 15?
He's 15 years old, yeah. He's starting he's out there with like Jose Martinez and Paxton Aronson.
I love that.
Anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Weeby.
I have no idea what that even means. I'm just going to keep moving on. I'm sure I'll figure it out in like 6 months. It'll pop up on a lineup somewhere. Erkin Card, Orlando City, out of Austrian Bundesliga. These are DP number 9. I haven't seen him play. I don't know much about him. Do you guys have any thoughts on that other than it's been a productive offseason for Orlando City? It seems like in replacing the Nani and Daryl DKs of the world at this point into sort of like-for-like players, at least positionally.
So I like the profile of the guy. I haven't seen him play more than just clips, but he's got the profile of a guy who will be, I think, a very good, maybe even great striker in this league. And this isn't a developmental project. This isn't a buy, develop, and sell project. This is a buy and keep him here, you know, half a decade and have him lead the line as hopefully a new and more glorious era of soccer arrives for this team. And like, I understand buying DPs who are like that, who are, higher floor, lower ceiling, because that's honestly what the Sounders have done for the past 6-7 years. You know, everybody knew that, that Nico Ladero wasn't going back to Europe. Everyone knew that Raul Ruiz Diaz was staying in the Americas. And those guys have been really successful. So it seems like that is the model that they have gone for here. And while that might not be as exciting in terms of what we get to talk about with, you know, narratives of, oh, developing another, you know, player who can be sold for $15 million to a big five league, blah, 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 blah. It's more exciting for the fans if he's scoring 15, 20 goals a year and they're making it to the conference final or beyond every year and winning. Like, that is what this is all about. And so I completely understand that signing from that perspective. And now it's just a matter of, like, can he actually be that guy?
Flip side is they have the developmental sell-on, big potential signing, and Facundo Torres already right. done. So you got both sides of the apple. We'll see what Oscar Pereja can do this year.
Both
with
sides
some
of
new
the
talent,
apple.
Let's say.
Both sides of the apple is like an all-time Weeby mix.
Did I say that? Did I?
Oh my God.
I didn't
God.
Even know I said it. Woo! I'm telling you, it's just a natural ability. It's a natural ability. It just flows.
That's amazing.
It flows, baby. Sergio Cordova. Done to RSL on loan from Augsburg, Venezuela international, a winger. Had been on loan at the club that now George Bello's at, Arminia Bielefeld, last year. I think he had 2 goals in like 25 games or
Wait,
something
Doyle's
like that.
Doyle's an but expert that, on that pronunciation. Doyle, you want to hit it?
Did I get it right? Doyle told me how to pronounce
no,
it.
No, I told you how I've heard Derek Ray pronounce it, and he's the expert.
He's the expert.
Bielefeld.
Correct.
Bielefeld. Boom.
I thought I said that.
Yeah, you did.
No, I didn't say you got it wrong. I just wanted Doyle to be able to show off a little, stretch
his
legs.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, of course. And Gustavo Cuellar to RSL potentially as well.
Yeah.
Dave, like, well, Augsburg, we already know the David Blitzer connection there. Like, but that's a payoff already for RSL with new ownership.
And what I like about that move is that it's a loan. And I think when you see a new ownership group come in, you don't want to go out and sign three huge DPs out the door before you've sort of found your feet. What level of club are you? What are your needs? And so I like that you're bringing in quality that improves your team at a position of need, but you're doing it in a way in which if it doesn't work out or if a different piece is out there, you still have flexibility going forward. And then with Cuellar, that's an elite player who improves this team, and it just seems like he's available. They're out on the market, and why not bring him in? And you pair him with Ruiz for the next 3-4 years, and that could be pretty special for them in that spot. So these are the right moves from RSL without, I think, completely breaking out that, you know, covering every academy player and giving them no opportunities to play. I think they're being very pointed about it.
Breaking news. Tom Bogert, sources, Vancouver Whitecaps and forward Brian White. We need to have Brian White news on the show, and we got it. Have agreed to a long-term contract extension that will keep the New Jersey Mario Gomez in British Columbia for 4 guaranteed years.
Congrats, B. White.
Big time. Big time for Brian White. Big time. That just broke.
Is Brian White going to be the highest, the most prolific domestic goal scorer in MLS this year?
Mm.
Domestic goal scorer.
Giassi Zardes of the bounce back year, maybe?
Giassi Zardes. Mason Toy.
Paul Areola. Could be that. Paul Areola.
No, he's
getting
not.
Goals
Paul Ariel is
a starter.
No, he's not going to be.
Listen, he's the man now.
I wouldn't even
Josie
take him.
Altidore with the Rapids. I'm just going to keep saying it. I'm just going to keep saying
Jeremy
it.
Jeremy Abovasi, Io Akinola with a possible bounce back here. I like Io a
Jesus
lot.
Ferreira.
Jesus
Ferreira.
Yeah. I think those are. I think we just about covered it.
Jordan Morris. Anders got
Jordan
it.
Anders says Jordan there. Morris. Okay, Jordan.
Yeah.
Also calls us haters, which fair enough, fair enough. DeAndre Yedlin to Inter Miami, that's done. A lot of talk about the Champo, didn't happen. We had a mail in here that says, how are you guys not talking about Inter Miami? I think they've had the most insane offseason in MLS history in terms of teardown and rebuild in just the span of a few months. The new signings, Campana, Mota, Rodriguez, look promising. And then add on top of that the Yedlin reuniting with Henderson story. This needs to make it into the next show, and thus it has. I think we've talked a good bit about Inter Miami. It's hard not to, given the way that they had a straight fire sale. Like, we just got Julian Carranza in. That's, you know, that's Inter Miami adjacent.
The things they're dealing with are unprecedented. I think we said that. Didn't we already preview Inter Miami? Or am I completely
I don't think we have.
Oh, well then, I said it in my own head when I thought we were previewing Inter-Miami, that this is the most moves that we've ever seen.
And that counts.
There are people who track this on Twitter that said, since they've been tracking it, this is the most in-and-out moves they've ever put down for one team. I think Chris Henderson has said this is more than he had to do for the expansion year for Seattle. It's what was necessary, and they're obviously playing with one hand behind their back. At the same time, this is a lot of young South and Central American players that Chris Henderson scouted himself. That's got to get you excited because his hit rate is fairly high with players from around the world. So they could be scrappy. They could be fun.
What about Yedlin, Doyle? Is this a good signing? I think it's a 4+1. Mm-hmm. So it's 28, 4 years guaranteed. That's a commitment.
Yeah,
by both player and club.
It is, but like it sounds like the right kind of commitment. 4+1 takes him into his early 30s. That's not too old for fullbacks, certainly. And like he has that level of trust with Chris Henderson. You know he can perform in MLS. He's played some of his best ball of his life recently. Right? I mean, that game that he played against Mexico for the U.S. was the best. Like that was the best I've ever seen DeAndre Yedlin play, and he played, you know, really well in Turkey last year. Not as much this year. So it just makes a ton of sense. He gets to come home to a better city than Seattle. So it checks all the boxes, right, Anders?
Straight violence.
He also, you'd assume with Lewis Morgan leaving, there's space out there for him to operate with probably right. Emerson Rodriguez tucking inside. And so Yedlin will bring more to that position, and it probably fits his skill set really well, where if he plays well, puts up numbers, is a factor, it keeps him in that national team conversation.
Yeah.
Arsenal, sign Austin Trusty.
I'm sorry.
Who will stay with the Rapids and then go on
what
loan.
What did you just say?
I said Arsenal signed Austin Trusty.
What planet do we live on?
Arsenal has signed Austin Trusty. It seems like to be a part of a loan army. It seems like, you know, it's a basic same ownership here. Yeah. You have Kroenke to Kroenke. And it seems to me like this is...
Well, I thought MLS doesn't sell players out of the league because of allocation money. And everyone wants to trade instead.
Oh, my God. Are you making fun of Sam? Is that what... Are you essentially subtweeting Sam on the show? Is that what that was?
Sam.
And you are...
If you're
and
still
you're
alive...
You're snitch tweeting on the back end of that in the mentions, adding Sam Stashkill. You're like, did you just... Yeah. Is this making fun of at Sam Stashkill?
Yeah. If Sam's still alive, I have not talked to him since the Honduras game, so he may not have gotten out of there.
He's from Chicago.
You think he went no jacket? Sam went no jacket, no hat, and then he walked home from the game.
Well, he was wearing two hats with the curls and then a beanie. That basically counts as two hats for him at this point. But yeah, that's a strange one. He'll be with the Rapids for a while here and then on loan to parts unknown. We shall see how that one works out. I haven't heard anything about fee or what the exchange is there. We've seen this before, obviously, within, you know, NYCFC to Manchester City. But we knew the fee with Jack Harrison.
Caden Clark.
Seen it before. Yeah, Caden Clark, that's a good one. Tyler Adams before him. So look, Austin Trusty wanted to go, and this is the best means to get him there. And for the Rapids, they have the depth. Make the kid's dream a reality. It's a good good selling point, and if he succeeds, another one as well. How about this? George Bello, he did not want to go to Belgium. And that might be where Austin Trusty goes, TBD. He wanted to go to Germany. He got to go to Germany. Arminia Bielefeld.
Big club.
Huge club. The American Bundesliga relegation race is going to be very interesting.
A new ETR segment.
Yeah, who stays up? Who stays up? We'll see about that one. We're going to talk Atlanta United in a little bit, so we'll talk Gutman at left back for them. Darwin Machis to Charlotte FC. That would be a good signing. That would fill in the left wing, creative potential, some goal scoring.
I think this would be an unbelievable pickup. And again, you're looking at a team where they're going to have two DPs and a high-end TAM player in TT or Ordóñez in that front three, but two of them are on loan. So you can see, how do they settle in? How do they react to MLS? How does the team build around them? I like the idea of having that flexibility, but this is high-end talent that can win games.
Karol Swiderski, I don't think we've talked about him. Polish DP out of the Greek League. They've bought him. There's no loan here. So they're starting to fill in those high-profile spots, our Charlotte, and we'll talk more about them. Later on, we'll do the preview. Douglas Costa at LA Galaxy, that appears to be happening. Tom Bogert said it first. He had the scoop there. Then Fabrizio Romano saying today that Costa's going to join the Galaxy 6-month loan plus 2-year contract set to be signed. Done deal. I don't know what the 6 month loan plus 2 year contract set to be. Who's he signing the contract?
So I wonder
with Juventus again or
no? So he's on Juve. I wonder if it's a pre contract with the Galaxy and then Juve loans him to close out his current deal. And then he plays out a 2 year deal with the Galaxy, which I think would be a mistake, by the way. I like the idea of bringing Douglas Costa in for a year and seeing where he's at, but he's 31. He's a player who mainly relies on his speed and he has dropped off the level that he's played at over the last few years. It would seem dangerous to lock him into a 2 year deal, but you never know what the options look like there.
I do what you're going to do.
It seems like a signing from like a different, slightly different MLS era, you know? Yeah. Like 31, he's not fully past it, but and I mean, I'm
it's like signing Nani.
But
Nani's a better all around soccer player, but right. and
more consistent, and you could like. I don't know that you can trust that amount of confusion I have with similar names. I don't think you can trust that Douglas Costa is going to come in and be a difference maker. I think you could trust that at least in moments, Nani was going to be that guy. And I would trust Nani to have more of those moments, but we could all be dead wrong about this.
Yeah, Costa also, could be amazing.
Greg Vanney just loves wingers. So give him 500 of them.
Collect them. Didn't have him in Toronto. Now he needs all of them.
He should have gotten Jefferson Soteldo. That would have been a good move.
Could have. Didn't happen for him. Carlos Salcedo's a DP in Toronto. Jefferson Soteldo's off to Tigres. So that's a done deal. Sebastian Jovenko's in TFC camp. Do you want to see the Atomic Ant in MLS this year?
I love Sebastian Jovenko. Him coming to this league was a seminal moment in this league's history. I loved watching him play. I don't care about this that much. This has been talked about for a year and a half. He's not going to be a factor in Major League Soccer. Whether he's on
so I will push back on that. Like he should not be a DP. He should not be a starter. But if he embraces the El Seno role, I can think of few things more exciting than Sebastian Jovenko off the bench in the 65th minute with Toronto FC needing a goal week after week after week. Like that has real potential. I don't know if it's going to happen. From everything I understand about his personality, he does not like coming off the bench. So he might not embrace it wholeheartedly, but if he does, that could be a hell of a lot of fun.
I agree with Doyle in this sense, but that's what
do you agree with Doyle that Jovenko will be fun off the bench or that Toronto will be trailing week after week late in games?
why not both? Okay. Why not both? Look, if you can get him on a very friendly number, it seems like he just wants to retire. And I'm sure that making money hasn't been a huge issue for him over the last few years, both in MLS and otherwise. I don't know. We'll see. I think it would be fun. I don't have to pay him. I don't have to deal with whether he wants to start or come off the bench. That's Bob Bradley's problem. So we'll see about that. Per Sam Stajkal, do you want to do the imitation of the Revs turned down a top five bid for Buxa of around $8 million? Do you want to give us that?
I can't do it.
you almost did. You almost launched.
I think I almost went Taylor. What are we doing here, though? I think I got lost in the middle.
Yeah, the emotions aren't flowing quite as strong on this one for you. But apparently, the Revs turned down some bids for Buxa from top five leagues. One of apparently around $8 million, according to Sam. Seems like between Matt Turner and him, they are trying to go win CCL or at least trying to hold on to that. So that's exciting.
Here's my USMNT, Sam, post show. Post-game, being in his hotel room going, the music's too loud at USMNT games. The music's just too loud, Paul. Paul, it's just too loud. That's my Sam impersonation now.
Nice. I like that. Tom Bogert says the Red Bulls have rejected record trade offers for Aaron Long this offseason. He's in the last year of his deal.
It's interesting because he wanted to go to Europe. The Red Bulls gave him a deal, but not as big as Tim Parker's deal. And obviously now coming off the injury, he can sign a pre-contract. And at 29,
halfway through the year.
I don't know that there's somewhere for him to go. It doesn't get him in a World Cup team, I don't think. So I'm not sure it even makes sense for him this year. But it is interesting that other MLS teams are reaching out and the Red Bulls are standing pat because they're a better team with him healthy and fit. If he's not, are the resources worth it? This is a really interesting story. And I think it's one that we'll look back on in a couple months.
Also, Andres Reyes is out until midseason.
Yeah.
So if they were to get rid of Aaron Long, that's the big red flag. Yeah, if they were to even for a boatload of allocation cash, like they would be up against it in terms of their back line depth. And it would maybe like they would arguably not even really be able to play that you know, 3-4-2-1 that Gerhard Struber had him playing down the stretch.
Yeah, there are rumors that there's a center back in his prime out of Blackburn that's on a free that they mm-hmm. can bring in or can sign a pre-contract. Tom Edwards, Tom Edwards sounds like he's coming back as well, who played in one of those center back roles for them over the course of last year. I agree with you. It's just it's an awkward situation for the Red Bulls to deal with, and I think it's going to show a lot of where their mindset is, the way this whole thing plays out.
I think it's an awkward place for Aaron Long to be at, too, right? Because if you get traded within the league for this large amount of what would have been a record pre-Paul Areola and maybe would have been afterwards as well, I mean, that team is going to say, we need to sign you to a long-term contract, right? Like, if your deal is running out, we are not going to have this expenditure on you. You have to commit to us. And on the flip side, Aaron Long's sitting there thinking, like, well, maybe I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe I want to sign the pre-contract in 6 months and choose my destination because I've already been in a situation where I wanted to do something and it didn't happen for me through something that was out of my control. So maybe he's just saying, nah, I want control.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going to choose. Maybe I go to the Champo.
And he would have free agency within the league as well, which is something to consider at the end of this year. So
yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a family now, too. He's a father.
Ooh. Oh, boy.
There's one for you. There's one. Real quick before we get out of here, hey, they're also linked with a Brazilian attacking mid out of Poland. Mm-hmm. Luquinhas, he's a Brazilian, so we'll see if that happens. TBD. Sebastian Blanco is apparently going to re-sign with Portland, says Jeff Carlisle, so we'll pay attention to that one. And Brian Schmetzer says there are, quote, no lingering knee issues for Nico Ladero. So that's good news for Sounders fans. All right, we're going to get to our previews. Just kick it off here. Our interview with Gonzalo Pineda. I talked to him on Wednesday down in Guadalajara. All right, it's an AT&T 5G call to the field. We're going out to preseason with Atlanta United and Gonzalo Pineda. Gonzalo, how's it going, man? How you feeling?
Everything okay, Andrew. Very good, very happy. Today was the first day in Guadalajara, and it's been amazing. So we expect two very good weeks of training with the team.
Guadalajara. I mean, you're going back to your roots right now. First head coaching job, back to the roots in Guadalajara. How does it feel to be in Mexico and doing this preseason and the first day there?
Yeah, it feels great. I think for many reasons, it makes sense to come back here to Guadalajara. I think the hotels are fantastic. The food, as you may know, is great. And also, it's a different experience for the players, just time to get along with each other, to know better each other. We have planned a few activities with them. But also the training grounds are great, and we're just looking at a very good preseason, different type of teams that we're going to face down here in Mexico. That's another thing, sometimes redundant, to play in Arizona or Florida MLS teams. So sometimes it's good just to go out and look at different opposition team.
So Gonzalo, tell me about what you've learned so far. I mean, I think you're it's not 20 games into your head coaching career at this point. What did you learn last year about yourself, about Atlanta United, about being the top guy in the position you're in now?
Well, many things. Management probably is the main one. Probably trying to manage up, trying to manage down. I think that's important part. And obviously knowing better my players. I think that's a good thing. Trying to know better my players. Try to get the best out of them, all of them. That's something that I learned from Brian, but I didn't have probably the opportunity to maximize that idea with the team. So now being in charge, you have to try to, you know, get the best out of people, not just the players, but the human beings and the people working for the club, the equipment guys, everyone working for the club. You try to maximize their potential and we all work together. So I think that's a big part of what we are trying to do today. But obviously, one of the main parts is also on the field. And I think we're trying to know better to the players and try to put together an idea that is going to become the identity of Atlanta United.
So last year you came into a situation, I don't know if desperate is the right word. Rob Valentino had sort of righted the ship in a little way, but for Atlanta United, it did feel a little bit desperate. Like, you guys are accustomed to winning trophies, being in the playoffs, being one of these power teams in MLS. You now have this offseason. You have a preseason for the first time to lay your foundation. You said last year, I believe, I didn't change a ton. What will change now? What will stay the same? How are you putting your stamp on this?
Well, in terms of the style, we want to remain something similar, just adding a few things. Like, I felt that we struggle to get in really dangerous areas on the field, you know, trying to get in really optimal areas in the final third and then having good numbers inside the box. I think that's one thing that maybe we are going to try to do better. But I really like the build-up play and the way we control most of our games in with the tempo that we want to play. We were very good in transition. We want to continue that way. So there are many positives already. But obviously, yeah, you talk a little bit about those desperate times or whatever. So I think that is a good testament for the team, how you deal with adversity. Because this team is very young. I mean, this franchise just came in 2017 and they found success immediately and everything was great. They had everything was working perfectly. And now in this maybe period of times where we haven't achieved a lot, that's where we are going to see the team. That's where we want to deal with that type of adversity. And I think the club, the whole organization is dealing very good. So there were times where we couldn't, but now we're trying to come back together, come back stronger, and deal better with these situations.
I got to hit you with the news side, and we'll get to Joseph Martinez and Araujo and all these other players that can make a difference in the final third. But there's an open DP spot, and for Atlanta, those things don't tend to stay open for long. We've heard the name Thiago Almada for months now. I assume you're not going to be breaking news on this show, so I'll ask it a different way. What kind of player fits your vision in that central attacking number 10 style role? And does Almada fit that?
Yeah, I think we can go on two directions, because obviously we're talking about a player that is going to be creative and is going to produce goals and assists in the final third. That's the main thing. The player that we bring has to produce that, because normally Atlanta United is investing heavy on that type of players, and normally they get right. So we want that. Now, the characteristics, it can be a good winger. You know, it can be a good guy that can be very good on the 1v1 dribbling to unlock lower blocks and stuff like that. Or it can be a very clever player, very good connector, similar to Thiago, as you mentioned. So obviously we have that a little bit balanced with Luis Araujo, you know, who's a very good dribbler, a very good guy when he's on the ball, and his speed and his power when he goes forward is fantastic. So another playmaker that maybe makes the right pass, that takes the right decisions in between the lines, I think can be something that we may be looking at.
Do you expect to have those three DP spots filled when you hit the field in late February, or is that a TBD in your mind?
I think that's going to be the case, that we're going to have the three DPs on the field when we face Kansas City, our first game.
Well, we'll look forward to that one. I want to ask you about Joseph Martinez, but we brought up Araujo here, and he had a quote preseason, said, "I need to score more goals. I need more assists." I know that he feels that personally. I assume he's hearing that from you as well. And you said, we're going to expect Luis to raise his level. He has this magic. He has this ability. We've seen it in the past in his career. We know it's here now. And there were moments last year where you're like, my God, this guy could be an MVP candidate. How good can he be in this league? Can he be an MVP candidate?
Well, I believe he is an MVP candidate for sure. Same as Joseph and same as probably you named Thiago Almada. I think the three of them, they have that caliber. It's just a matter of if they truly believe that. That's the question. It's for the players, because we all believe they are the very good DPs. They are MVP candidates. That's why they are in a team like Atlanta United. But it's about them and performing consistently in every training session as an MVP. And that's the question. And I think they are going in the right directions. They are training very hard. They are doing all the right things. So we'll see if we can help them also with a good style of playing that can, again, maximize their potential, and then they can be true candidates for that. But just because you ask about that, I don't want the message to be we're relying on one player or two to produce victories or championships. When we're talking about winning, we're talking about the team. And since Brad on the back, we need that cover, and when then the center backs, and we need everyone trying to produce for the team. So it's not just one man's job. It's a team's job, and we all have to work for each other.
What's the difference between a good and great team in this league? I think last year I would call Atlanta United a good MLS team, as you guys evened out toward the end of the year and your results showed that. But I don't think you were a great MLS team. You've been a part of great MLS teams as a player and a coach. What's the difference?
Well, it is for me getting number one, clear ideas. I think that's number one. Number two is having the right mentality, because when you go through a long season, you have to have a tough and resilient mentality where not always goes good. Sometimes there are ups and downs. So there are moments where you struggle a little bit, injuries, you know, many things that happen in MLS. So you have to be tough mentally. And that's a part where we try to work a little bit, but also it's getting at the right time in playoffs. So when you are in a good momentum, you have, you know, your style of game, you have confidence, then you have better chances, I would say, to win the trophy, the MLS Cup. But we are hitting also trying to hit the one in Support Shield. I think that's one that we can achieve. And obviously it's about, for me, good ideas with good mentality.
Supporter Shield, watch Atlanta United every game, got to do it, and you got to watch Joseph Martinez. Gonzalo, what percentage would you say Joseph was at as far as health, fitness, effectiveness last year? I mean, he had moments, but he wasn't that 2017 to 2019 just absolute monster that we'd become accustomed to.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to measure a percentage for Joseph's, potential or how he played last year. What I would say is he wasn't at his best. We all saw that. He was coming back from a tough injury, very tough injury, and still no one scored more goals than him in the team. So that's a good testament to say, okay, if he's going to be better this year, he's going to be better physically, he's going to be fitter, he's going to be faster, he's going to be better than last year. I hope he scores many, many goals for this club. And if we help him with clear ideas to create a lot good chances for him, I'm sure that he's going to score many goals for Atlanta United. So my expectations for him are very high for this year.
Is it reasonable for those of us that watch this league every week or support the team or have this place for Joseph Martinez in our hearts to expect that he could return to the heights of 2017 to 19 when he was scoring between 20 and basically 35 goals a year? Is that too much to expect? Is that too much weight to put on him?
Well, we have to see, right? And again, it's not about putting pressure on only one guy. I mean, if we don't serve the right passes, if we don't create the right chances for him, he won't score many. So it's, again, a team's effort. But that's the case that we hope that he comes back to the Joseph Martinez in 2017 and 18, where he was fantastic. He scored many, many goals. That's expectation. If we don't think that Joseph is going to come back to that level, he wouldn't be here in the team anymore. So the expectation is, yes, he's going to be back to that level.
Ah, I can't wait to watch that. I saw that goal for Venezuela. I'm sure he's not happy about the result in World Cup qualifying, but that's a nice little teaser of what's to come. I know I've been asking you about stars, so I'm going to take it back a point. Who's the guy that you're just excited to work with right now that might not get headlines or you might not get asked about in media availability? Somebody within the squad that you're just like, this is, it's been a real joy to work with this guy so far.
Well, I take pride to work with the young players. I think everybody knows Luis Araujo, everybody knows Marcelino, everybody knows Rosero, Orsi, Santi, Joseph Martinez. Everybody knows.
We get it. You have a lot of stars, coach.
Yeah, sorry. But everybody knows the big players, right?
No,
for each team. The young players are the ones that need more work. And sometimes we coaches, we just focus on the main guys or the guys that are going to play multiple games. And I really like Caleb Wiley. I think he has a big, big ceiling. I think he's the one that can really, really compete for a spot at his age in the squad. And also, like recently, Aiden, an academy player or a player that's been playing more for the second team, he's been doing very good. He's been starting the last two games, the last two friendly. He's here in Guadalajara, and he's performing at a very good level. And the other one is Tyler Wolf. I feel like Tyler is another 18-year-old, very good, super technical, clinical, inside the box, that still can grow and still can be a very good player for us. And obviously George Campbell, who's a little bit under the radar. No one pays attention to George Campbell. But for me, he has also big potential. If he switch things on this year, he's a little bit, understand better the game. from his perspective. He's physically very strong. He's super tall, very physical center back. He has all the attributes of a good center back. So I think he's another one that I am going to look at very closely.
Let's keep it on center backs. Miles Robinson's with the national team right now. He's not in Guadalajara. What is his ceiling, in your opinion, and how do you help him reach it?
Well, I think his ceiling is very high. I think, sometimes center backs with many games on the pocket, they tend to improve. And they are ones that probably they don't go super high in the stats and many things. So they are more quiet at times. But I think you see the potential of Miles Robinson being very physical, super tall, super fast, very good in the air, dominant, defending a lot of space on the back. And that's one of the main reasons he's with us, because he can defend very good the space in behind. We like to be on the front foot, all the players in the attacking half and even beyond the midline, so he can cover the back. And I think we're going to try to work with him a little bit in the build-up play and try to improve. He's already good, but I think that's one of the areas where he can be much better for the team. But I think he's a player with high ceilings in the team.
I got to ask you about yourself before you go. You're only 39 years old. You're a young manager. You're just starting this thing out as being in the top job. What do you dream about as a professional, as a manager now? What do you aspire to? Obviously, you're in Atlanta. I'm not asking you to say, hey, I'm looking to leave Atlanta. But what do you think about as you sort of plot out your career over the next, decades, ultimately?
Well, I have big ambitions, obviously, as a coach. I told to media many times that one of my dreams is to be in Europe, coaching Europe. I didn't have that privilege as a player to play in Europe. And that's an experience that I want to have in my life. But if I'm truly honest, right now, my only dream is to give a championship to Atlanta United. That's all my energy, all my efforts, my day by day, everything, all my mind is on Atlanta United, the next start, bringing the second star to the shield, and that's where my mind is at the moment.
All right, there you have it, Gonzalo Pineda. Focused on Atlanta United, but big dreams, big ambitions. That's the same for the club. Gonzalo, we appreciate your time, man. It's great to talk.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
Big thanks to Gonzalo Pineda for joining us and giving a little insight into what they're doing, taking the time in Guadalajara, where he says they're taking on competition that's a little different. It's redundant, he says, to play other MLS teams in preseason, which I thought was an interesting take from him. You had a thought, Dave?
Yeah, it's also... it's normally what CCL teams do. I was just going to say, I hope they're not eating too many tortas ahogatos down there, because those things are not good for preseason, but they are delicious when you are eating.
I have on good authority that they're eating chicken and rice and vegetables in the hotel on the buffet. They're not doing what we would do if we went down there, coming back 15 pounds overweight. Here's our haiku from 2021. I guess, okay, so the father is back. That's two references.
Oh!
That's from 2021. I didn't have a choice. This is not, I didn't choose that.
What?
That was from a different era. Father is back. New manager, new teammates. Is the soul back too? The soul was not back. It turned out that the soul was damned. Didn't have a chance. Didn't have a chance. So their haiku for 2022 is this. Is good enough? Surely not. Trophies matter. Five stripes can't stop. So to me, this year is about getting back to, I don't know, what the core of the club was to start, which is this ambition and the ability to make good on that ambition. You heard Gonzalo Pineda in that interview talk about winning the Supporters Shield, talk about basically MVP candidacy for their star players, talking about Joseph Martinez getting back to being his very best. This is Atlanta. This is what they want. This is what they expect. They expect to compete for trophies. And prior to the debacle of the last, year and a half or so, maybe a little longer, they won those trophies. So that's what this year is about. Key signings, Andrew Gutman recalled from his loan. This is just good succession planning. This is what you want from MLS teams, right? Is that you have this incredible prospect that you bring through, that you give time. George Bello is a good player, breaks into the national team, plays some big games. He's at the end of his contract. That's not ideal necessarily, but you still sell him to the Bundesliga. And you have Andrew Gutman waiting in reserve to slot right in. Ronald Hernandez, Is he back? Is he just they made it happen finally, permanently, I think. Osvaldo Alonso, of course, rejoining Pineda from their days in Seattle. And then TBD on Thiago Almada or another DP. But it sounds like that is going to happen. What do you think, Doyle, they need in that third DP, whether it's Almada or otherwise? What would you look for if you were Atlanta United?
I mean, Almada needs to be the guy he's been billed as, right? He's supposed to be the best young number 10 in all of Argentina, if not, you know, all of the Americas. He's supposed to be a chance creator and a guy who, you know, is able to conduct an offense, conduct an attack. And this is all the same sort of stuff that we heard about Ezequiel Barco when he was coming 4 years ago. And I haven't seen a ton of Almada. He's super skilled. He is very good off the dribble. He reminds me of Barco. From what I've seen of him, and the underlying numbers kind of agree with this, he does not seem like a natural string puller. He seems like a guy who gets on the ball and can do some wonderful things with it, but isn't a, you know, genius level run of play chance creator. So they need my impression to be wrong, because a lot of the issues with Atlanta over the past couple of years is that whether it was, you know, Marcy Moreno or even Araujo, but especially Barco, sometimes when the ball gets on their foot, it dies. The whole movement dies because they just like to take too many touches. They need to get rid of that. They need to be a team that, you know, goes forward at pace, especially when in transition. And I mean, that's how the best Sounders teams have played over the years. And that's, of course, Gonzalo Pineda's blood. And that's how the best Atlanta United teams played in 2017 and 18. And even the back half of 2019, when Frank De Boer was trying to put the brakes on entirely, they were still like, no, we're going forward. They need to rediscover that. That's how you get the best out of Joseph. And if you get the best out of Joseph, then you are a title-winning team in this league. So they need Almada to not be a guy who slows it down and does lots of stepovers. They need him to be a guy who uses his skill to open the game up and put teams on the back foot. Because if Joseph is attacking a defense that's on the back foot, he's scoring goals.
Our star spotlight is split. I mean, Joseph Martinez, I think, is that guy, but we're going to do him in the over-under because it's just too prime for that section of this preview. So Luis Araujo is going to be the guy, Dave. And you heard from Gonzalo Pineda that they expect more. Araujo expects more from himself. He had 4 goals, 4 assists in about, I guess I have the exact, thanks to Anders, 1,156 minutes in 15 games. He was in a lot of good positions that didn't pay off. He also did some spectacular things. They need to somehow find a way to bridge that gap. And Gonzalo said, I think he can be an MVP candidate. What should reasonably be expected of Luis Araujo this year?
And by the way, Anders, not an MVP candidate right now. Didn't have the Frank De Boer, Jose Mourinho clip ready to roll when Doyle mentioned his name, which I'm very let down by. But yeah, he can be a guy who, if you can get him in his spots where he's 1v1, I think he can dominate defenders, creating chances coming off that right wing. And you're looking at a guy, one, the David Goss theorem. Last year was his first year moving during a pandemic.
God, we branded
getting
this so
to a
well.
Team. So you got, everyone's got to have a thing. Gets, and my thing is waiting. That's my thing. My thing is just wait.
He wasn't very good this year, but just wait. Just wait for next year.
But just wait.
This wasn't my best show, but the David Goss theorem says next show. Elite.
Next show, I'm going to kill it. Yeah. And he came into a team that had all the issues. And the issues Doyle talked about, the lack of just team continuity in the attack, means that a lot of times when he was getting the ball, it wasn't 1v1 because it wasn't quick enough in rotation. And defenders had already closed in, or Moreno had already come into his space, and there wasn't as much room to operate. And I think that's where you look at him having an offseason, Pineda having time to build a system around these guys, and can he open up those gaps for Araujo to take advantage down that right side by himself? And Brooks Lennon has been really good at that overlapping wing back. Maybe you have to figure out times where he can underlap so Araujo can get out wide and not always have to come inside and create chances. But you are looking at a guy that can put up double, you know, double goals, double assists, double digits, because he's that talented, that skilled, and he's in his prime. It's just about settling him in and making him a part of the system that Pineda's putting together.
He needs to be a star. That's the long and the short of it for them. Let's do 22 under 22. Not a ton of candidates to get playing time, despite the fact that Gonzalo was talking up, like, working with those guys, trying to advance them. I mean, Caleb Wiley's a guy that he mentioned really liking and what he's doing around. We had an email here from Hank in Salt Lake City that says, who's the next Reynolds or Paredes, the teenage fullback that balls out in their first season as a full-time starter and gets sold to a big European team for, I don't know, $7 million or whatever it is. He says he's frantically buying Caleb Wiley stock as he writes this, but I don't think Caleb Wiley's going to get a ton of time this year. Probably MLS Next Pro is going to be where he gets his games this year. The 17-year-old Tyler Wolf was mentioned as well, Doyle. This doesn't seem like a team this year that's going to be heavily U22.
Yeah, I don't think so. Right. And that's fine. You know, that's what MLS Next Pro is for. If these guys are good enough, they'll push their way in. And you know, hopefully, if you're an Atlanta United fan, hopefully that's what happens.
The three names that I'm throwing in there, which I don't know how much they'll play this year, but I hope, is George Campbell at center back, Efrain Morales at center back as well, even younger. And then Justin Garces, who was at UCLA the last few years as a goalkeeper. I think he's the succession planning for Brad Guzan. Brad Guzan's, what, 36, 37 now?
Yeah.
So I thought they did a good job in
getting Garces. Is Jackson Conway second on the number 9 depth chart? Like, I'm looking at it. He seems to be, and there has not been a lot of talk about bringing in a backup for Joseph, right?
So I think Felipe was saying yesterday Eric Lopez is on his way back to the team.
Yeah, thing with Banfield wasn't able to negotiate a deal. Work out.
So in theory, he would also be in that center forward depth chart. Otherwise, yeah, Jackson Conway is the guy.
It's a win now team, and the depth chart, the players reflect that. We had another question in the mailbag for Atlanta United.
Also, by the way, the win now with Atlanta is Franco Ibarra, Santiago Sosa, if Thiago Almada joined. All those guys are young.
Yeah,
all
they're like 22, 23, 24 years old. Yeah.
So Atlanta just doesn't do it through their academy, even though they did just sell George Bell.
Let's see. Can Atlanta contend for a championship this year? That's the big mailbag question from a lot of people. That's sort of the expectations they have. Do you think they can contend or will contend this year?
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to say that they... I will not predict that they will win a trophy, but I think that they will be legitimately in the hunt for a couple of different trophies. And I wouldn't be shocked if they, you know, if they're healthy and Almada is as good as his rep, then at the end of the year, nobody will want to play this team in the postseason. Or, you know, they could pull something off in the League's Cup, something like that, which is the most important tournament in the entire world. Yeah.
God.
So, no, this is like this. This team has to make.
Give me Atlanta United Pumas.
A title team.
I don't think that they'll contend.
That's Gonzalo Pineda's. That's his heart.
Oh,
man.
That's right.
That's his corazon.
You're right.
His sangre.
You're right. That's my bad.
That's where he comes from.
Wait, Weeby.
Or Chivas.
Yeah, well, Chivas was next. But, you know, you could go Puebla. Yeah. There's a couple different teams you could throw out in there. Right?
I don't think they'll contend for a supporter shield, but I think a successful year for them is when we enter the MLS Cup playoffs saying, yeah, I could see Atlanta go on a run, which you couldn't say this year. And you haven't been able, obviously they didn't make the playoffs last year. I think they need to be in a spot where they could do something similar to what Portland did last year. And I think that's a successful year going
forward.
Hold on.
They did make the playoffs last year.
Yeah, I know. And we didn't say that.
Gasman, you said this year, meaning 2021.
They did make
pretty
the
sure.
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I said. No, but I said. You said going they into didn't, the playoffs this year.
No, you said.
No one
they
would
didn't,
say they. Could
they
win
didn't
cup.
Do that. You said they didn't do that. Well, we're gonna have to go back and play the tape. I understood what you meant, but you mucked it all up, which is why Weeby is confused.
Like that, you know, right. Two sides of the apple on this one. All right.
Weeby can't have anyone missing.
By the way, it's like the opposite of Pavlovian with the buzzer. We just don't pay attention.
No, we gotta stop.
We don't pay attention at all.
Anders is gonna have an
aneurysm. There's not even a drool. There's not even a sign of stopping. We had a question about whether Ozzie Alonso has anything left in the tank. I guess we'll find out. Let's do the over-under. We've talked about why it could be their year, I think. You know, their stars play like MVPs. They have all this depth and talent. We know they have the players. Can they have the team that does it? Can Gonzalo Pineda do that? 19.5 over-under for Joseph Martinez goals.
Under.
Under. He had 12 last year. mostly hurt, and then 1,600 minutes on a team that was,
if you're,
for two-thirds
if you
of the year, was
Atlanta's
in disarray.
If you think Atlanta's going to be successful this year, Doyle, then you kind of have to go over. Because in what you talked about, if Joseph's healthy and on the field and these players...
Anders went over. Anders is switching allegiance from Seattle to Atlanta, it seems.
Well, he's following Pineda. But like,
and Ozzie.
If Atlanta's any good and Joseph's on the field, he's going to score goals. The question is, do you believe that that will be true? Obviously, the safer money is on under. So I'll go.
Yeah, over. Give me the over for the father. Let's go. Let's had to give it to him. All right, Minnesota United. Let's roll into it.
It's because we didn't do Orlando in this one too. If we did Orlando as well, then we'd be.
I'm the only one. I'm the only one who went under 19.5 goals for Joseph.
Yeah,
19.5.
It's like, safe.
That's a good total, man. 19 was the golden boot winner last year.
You live life safe in the corner, and you just never achieve.
That's cool.
Hit the dance floor, Doyle. Don't watch, man. Don't watch from afar. All right, on to Minnesota United we go. Always linked with Atlanta United. Had to include them both in the same show. And Minnesota had to go second. That's just the way it is, Loons fans. No, I'm just kidding. 2021, Bibello the God. Looking for a 9. Doubters, MLS.com. I have 2 this year for 2022. Rodrigo, Sanchez, Trevier, help me out here. Because I've gone to him for help. You know, he's a wordsmith, so to speak, and certainly a haiku expert. And sometimes he likes my haikus, sometimes he doesn't. So I gave him an opportunity to do one as well. You can vote on which one you think is better. I'll do them both here. Inconsistency, the Achilles of the Loons. Underdogs again? Or identity check. Reynoso is the brains, but where is the heart?
I like the second one better.
Aha, Rodrigo.
Nice.
Take that. One vote for Weeby. All right. So what's the storyline for the year for them, Doyle? Both of these are kind of getting at the same thing, I think, in that we don't really know exactly what Minnesota United are going to be.
That's the storyline of the year. Like, for a team with as many pieces that have been together for a couple years now, Bibello, Robin Lud, you know, the much of the back line from Roman Metaner and Michael Boxall, and obviously Gasper's been there for, I think this is his fourth year as a starter now. It feels weirdly unsettled. And I think that's partially because it kind of didn't work last year in attack, especially with the arrival of Uno. He was supposed to be a guy who feasted. He certainly had his chances, and you should believe the underlying numbers, right? Like, if a guy finds that many chances, he eventually will almost certainly start scoring that. But like, it didn't quite work, and then in the playoffs, that loss in Portland was so listless. And so, like, they did not look like a team that wanted to be there. And that was such a red flag, considering what they had looked like 12 months before that in the playoffs when they were a buzzsaw. So I don't know what to expect from this Minnesota United team, even though they have a lot of really high-quality pieces.
Quiet offseason for them. Re-signed Brent Coleman, went and got the forward who will be a backup, you assume, from South Africa, the U22 player. Other than that, not a ton. They lose Ozzie Alonso. But I think it's more, Dave, about another year with Fragapani and Hunu. Like, that's what this is.
Yeah, and those were moves that happened in the middle of last year. So that, in my mind, and a lot of times when I do my notes, I put those players in the acquisitions because I think those moves are made. You're still in the, like, these are new players. Can they fit in? There's something weird going on with Fragapane. He's like the Grayson Allen of MLS. So you got to figure that out from a minimum. And then with Hunu, I think you saw the attributes he brings to the team. It feels like the biggest thing he can bring is just putting Lode, Reynoso, and Fragapane in the right spots. Not having Robin Lud have to play center forward. Having a guy that Reynoso can play off of. That feels like it might be his biggest attribute. And if he can score 10-plus goals alongside that, then it's worth it for this team. But again, and I think to Doyle's point, this is a team that they don't impose themselves specifically in games. And so it changes per opposition, it changes per matchup, and you don't get consistency, I think, that way. Now, if these guys can perform at a high level, game in and game out, that might not matter because it's just pure talent that's winning out.
Star spotlight, a lot of talent here. Emmanuel Reynoso. 2,391 minutes. He had 5 goals, 10 assists. But the underlying numbers loved him as far as chance creation goes. I mean, just absolutely loved him. He was second to Carlos Hill, who was by far and above the winner in that in every sense. And, of course, the MVP basically because of it. Reynoso's had an interesting offseason. You may have read about the issues that he had in Argentina, but he is he's back with Minnesota United. We said he's the brains, Doyle, in the haiku, the winning haiku, Rodrigo.
Read that haiku again, Weeby. Give me the haiku again. It was so
good. Give me the haiku again? Okay, hold on here. Identity check. Reynoso is the brains, but where is the heart? Where is it? God, the heart.
Now, did Weeby write that one, or did I write that one, like, just off the top of my head?
You had the final line, all right? You did the final line. I asked you for a final line. You gave me the final line. I needed the final line.
I gave you the last two lines.
Because those are the two parts I liked.
Wow. Doesn't have the Frank DeBoer Mourinho line, but has the horn.
What are you asking me?
I don't know. What do you think of Reynoso's year last year, and can he provide more than basically 10 combined goals and assists?
Yeah, I mean, like, strictly staying with on-field stuff, he is my favorite player in the league to watch. I love a classic throwback South American classic number 10, and that's what he is. He reminds me in a lot of ways of Marco Echeverri, and there is, like, it's hard to find higher praise than that. I love watching this guy play. Yes, more than 10 combined goals and assists. It wouldn't shock me if he hit 20 assists this year. The underlying numbers for him and for guys like Ludd and Uno and, you know, I guess Fragapane, it suggests that, like, that type of performance is in there for a full season if they can stay healthy. So I'm expecting a big year from Reynoso. If that happens, it likely means that Minnesota as a whole are going to have a really big year. But as I said at the top of this segment, there's just something a little bit off. And I can't exactly put my finger on what it is. Maybe it's just that, like, there's questions behind him in central midfield, where last year he had Ozzy as a shield. And this year it's Will Trapp, and can Hassani Dotson do that job? And that's more of a question than I think most contenders have at that part of the field.
And Dotson, I think, is a really interesting conversation this year, because there's skill sets that if you can unleash and weaponize, he can be a game changer for you. But they have tried to put him in a box that he doesn't totally fit multiple times, and he hasn't been able to perform at the right level. And now, as Doyle says, without Ozzy there and Jan Gregus, it's Dotson or nothing. And so can him and Will Trapp make the right partnership there? Can you find that space for Dotson to sort of attack the game, counter-press aggressively, fill in space alongside Reynoso, and be the guy who played at the Olympic qualifying last year and looked like a guy who could push in to a national team conversation? Obviously, the Olympics are much higher level than a full national team setup, so that's a different
guy. Yeah, I mean, look, the World Cup is a jumping off point to get to the Olympics. We all know that. Like, there are pinnacles in your soccer career, and
obviously,
you know, it all comes down to, it's all about the rings. Yeah. Ring culture, but not the rings that you're thinking of, like the Olympic rings. 2,222 player to watch, Joseph Rosales.
Who?
Honduran central midfielder. Yeah, I know. I felt the same way. Didn't exactly have a feel for that one. Honduran central midfielder. Young guy. We'll see if he can push in. And you mentioned it, Dave. Their midfield depth right now, at least on the depth charts that we maintain, is perilously thin. There's not a lot of names to fill in there. And you have Gregus and Ozzy gone. So you wonder if there might be more additions coming that way. How about the mailbag question here? Has Minnesota topped out with their current team? Will they need a hard reset, or can this team win a trophy?
I think this team can win a trophy. I think that attacking front four, if they do settle the way I expect in their second year, especially Hunu and Fragapane, I think that they are as good as anyone in this league. Brent Coleman and DeBassi have shown, especially in that playoff run last year, that they can stand up in big games to high-level attacking opponents. And Metzeder is one of the best right backs in the league. They've got depth at goalkeeper. So this is a team, and Chase Gasper is a solid left back. This is a team that can do it. again, you come back to, if you don't have a very clear identity, then how can you have consistency? How can you put yourself in a spot to have a home playoff game, to not have to go on the road to Portland in the opening game? Those are the question marks. But in terms of like stepping on the field against anyone in this league, Minnesota toe-to-toe can beat anyone in MLS.
That's the over-under here. 4.5. They're finishing the West. Basically, will they get a home playoff game? That's the question.
Under.
I'm under as
I
well.
I think they're a team that most likely to be in like the fringes of the playoff race in the West. So somewhere, you know, 6-7 or
same place they were last year.
Maybe worse than that.
Same place they were last year. Because last year from 5, which is what Minnesota finished at, and of course had to go to Portland and lost, from 5 to 9, that was a 4-point separation there. So you figure LAFC with Carlos Vela, you figure LA probably going to make a jump forward. You know, RSL has the opportunity to. They're getting more talent with Rusnak gone, but they're starting to make moves. Vancouver Whitecaps had that run. Maybe they have a better first half.
And Nashville moving is a big part of that as well.
Yeah, Nashville moving is a big part of that as well. Yeah, I think we did this, why this could be their year, predictions. I mean, we just handled that one. Mm-hmm. The This Is Fine meme is, again, the same. They just, what's the identity? What are they rallying around? And can they outperform or at least match their underlying numbers? I think Reynoso can be an MVP candidate. You know, that's what they signed him for. He needs to be for them to reach their potential. All right, Austin FC, the haiku from 2021. Good vibes in Verde. Like the roster, respect Wolf. Be legendary. I don't think that was my best work in 2021, not going to lie. How about this one for 2022? Good vibes aren't enough. Bongos? Check. Points? Not so much. Culture comes with wins. Culture off the field seems pretty good. They don't have a culture on the field yet, it doesn't seem like. And maybe that comes with a lot of changes midseason, like you said, Dave. I mean, like Driussi and Musa Jete and all these guys. I mean, those were all late signings for them. They didn't have a full team. I mean, this is sort of the way a lot of expansion teams have done it. They've waited to have those big pieces. And it's difficult to make the playoffs if you don't have the big pieces to match other teams. And then you're trying to play catch-up from the summer window on. But yeah, the vibes are good. I like the vibes. Austin FC looks fun. The fan base looks awesome. They have bongos. They did not have wins last year, and that's what this year is all about getting the results. Key signings, Zan Kolmanich, he's on a permanent transfer, got the left back locked down. Kip Keller in the super draft. Ruben Gabrielsen comes in to bolster the center back core, which they needed to do.
He's a truck, Johan Valencia. By the way. Gabrielsen, whew. That he is ripped. Good Lord. Anyway, continue.
Maxi Arruti is in from Houston. And so, you know, first season, he's going to be a monster. He's just going to be pinging him from like 35 yards and bringing out the bow and arrow. What do you think about the signings this offseason, Dave? Have they made progress?
Yeah, I think they've nailed everything they had to. Now, when you look at, I think from Jurisi's second appearance on, the form they were in was a playoff team. So they showed last year that they brought the pieces in and that they could be that competitive. And then their biggest holes were center back. Clearly, with Pochettino leaving, they had to reshift things in midfield. And then you kind of bring in Arruti as cover for Gite, because you saw last year there is no other center forward on this roster outside of Gallagher. So I think they've nailed it. Kip Keller was a home run for them in the draft. Not that he'll probably be a factor this year, but just in general at that spot on a GA deal as a domestic, they bring in an experienced center back to start for now alongside Romano or Cascante. And then in Valencia, they believe he is an elite defensive midfielder in this
Valencia
league.
Valencia is the
necessary
one. Yeah, Valencia is the one, because if you look at it, if you watch them play, so I would actually disagree with some of the stuff you said at the top, Weeby, about this team not having an identity. They did have an identity. Like, they were very clear in how they wanted to play. It was very
I was
similar.
Saying a winning identity, by the
no,
way.
No, okay, that's fair. They did not have that.
They
played like Greg Berhalter's U.S. national team. It was positional play. It was try to move the ball. It was keep your structure and all that. And a lot of it was very pretty and very promising, but they would repeatedly get blown up through midfield because they did not have any speed and they did not have any ball winners. And Valencia is that guy. And so I think that what we're seeing with his signing is maybe a shift away from what, and like I'm putting everything in the context of Berhalter's national team, because Josh Wolf was an assistant under Berhalter for the first couple of years with the U.S. and then an assistant before that with Columbus. So I think what this is going to end up looking like is more of the old Columbus 4-2-3-1 with Jojan Valencia in the Artur role and Alex Ring as more of the Will Trapp, you know, drop deep and orchestrate, and then Drewsy as kind of the Pepe Higuain flow everywhere number 10. I think it's going to end up looking more like that than it did like last season, which was much more of a pure 4-3-3 with a back point and dual number eights kind of doing their, you know, trying to do the same job. That shifted when Drewsy arrived at the end, and the fact that there was like no place for Pochettino in that type of setup is kind of it's a tell as to what's coming. And Valencia being as good as his rep and his clips is a big determining factor as to whether or not that's going to work. But I do like the underlying ideas sort of informing this like I haven't talked to Josh Wolf. I'm just going by what I've seen, but I like the underlying ideas that seem to be informing this from Josh Wolf.
And they were quick to move Pochettino, which was kind of a mea culpa, which is fine. Immediately as the offseason started, they were already working on getting him out of the team and bringing a player like this in. So this is from a full top down. I think they acknowledged it. They saw the success when Drewsy got there for that period, and they've done a good job, I think, grabbing that and initiating these changes and not sort of standing by what you already did and saying, well, this is talent. We can make it work. And I think Austin fans should be excited.
Should be excited about a full year of Sebastian Drewsy as well. 17 games in 2021, about 1,400 minutes, 5 goals, 5 assists. You would think that that is going to grow with Jete a little bit more settled. I thought Cecilio Dominguez had bright spots, but was largely inconsistent, especially in the final third.
Didn't
last
he get pulled out of a game in like the 12th minute for no injury one time?
Yeah, it was a weird one. It was a weird season for him.
It's not his role. He's not a go-to player that you play through. And he's a piece where he will be better this year because there's more talent on the field. And he can be isolated in 1v1 spots. He can come in off that left wing and play as a second forward when, you know, defenders follow Giete to the near post or track to Drewsy on the top of the box.
Is Giete going to make that run to the near post? Because he was fantastic in hold-up play. He was fantastic in link play. He was abysmal in the box last year. Like, I loved everything.
Trust the theorem.
Trust the theorem. Okay, is the theorem going to teach him how to move in the box? Because there were moments where he was just standing stock still 16 yards from and not making that near post run. That is my biggest – not Dominguez, not Drewsy, or not Diego Fagundes. I think Diego Fagundes could end up having a really big year. Is Gite actually going to be a go-to goal-scoring center forward? I'm worried based upon – both his career numbers and like what we saw from him last year, that like he's going to be an everything but the goals type of guy.
And in the system, movement's pretty important from your center forward.
Real important.
Maybe the most important thing. Drewsy as a star. Musa Jete was our 2222 player to watch, so I think he will be 23 at some point during the season. So he's not a he's not a lock in for that one. I think we covered both of those. What is the, let's see, we don't have an over-under. What do we want to do the over-under on?
I mean, Gite goals.
What would you set it at?
I'll set it at 11.5.
Ooh.
I'm going to go under and say that it doesn't matter. I'm going to go under, and I'm going to say that there are going to be 2 or 3 other double-digit goal scorers on this team.
It's a strong take. I like that, David. It's a very strong.
Yeah, I would have gone under 2. I think if you would have put it around like the 8.5 zone, I might have been tempted to give it the over just on a full season of work. But he did have one goal in about 600 minutes, 13 games last year. That was missing, part of it. If somebody's going to teach you movement in the box, Josh Wolf seems like a decent candidate to do so, both as a player but also as a coach within this system. You'd hope that comes good this year. How about the this is fine meme for Austin? Where's the collapse come from? Is it just the back line again? They can't stop anybody?
Yeah, to me. Go ahead, David.
No, you go.
No, you go.
No, you go.
No, you go. Just couldn't help it. Once you started doing it, I had to do it.
None of their center backs last year were impressive. I thought Romana, is it Romagna? Is there a tilde? Romana was really poor last year. Cascante he's basically just a reserve in this league. So Gabrielsson's going to have to be good from the jump. I think they're going to need minutes from Kip Keller this year. If they're going to good minutes, if they're going to get anywhere near that playoff line, I don't think the guys who are already or were already in the fold, they don't look like MLS starters to me.
How about this? Wyatt could be their year/predictions. Anders was laughing at us in the chat here, basically saying in true extra time fashion, everybody makes the playoffs. It would be an interesting exercise if somebody went back after this and I am not tracking what I'm saying about where they're going to end up. It's all just in the moment, just throwing a dart at the dartboard.
The problem with what we do is we are doing standings when teams have not finished completing their rosters going into the season. And so you say a thing.
That's a good excuse. That's a great excuse to use.
If JJ Macias plays for Sporting KC or Kyrie Shelton starts at center forward, those are two different teams. So
they might That's be a better team. It might be a better team with Shelton starting at center.
I could have bet money Doyle was going to say that.
You can't hold us to any of this. Why could it be their year, Doyle?
Austin?
And in what sense would it be their year? Like, if it's their year, what does that year look like?
It looks like competing for a playoff spot. Like in there, down the stretch. Like, okay, they might get this done. But I just think defensively, they're too frail to be that team.
In the playoffs or out, then? I was going to say out. Out.
Yeah. I'm going to put them in.
How many teams
A lot of it relies on Gabrielsson being
This is breaking
close.
News from David Goss. 12 teams make the playoffs in the West.
Honestly, that's as plausible as anything.
I said the week you were out, Doyle, I said no to a bunch of teams. Weeby and Kaylin are both like, yeah, of course. And I was like, this feels like 37 teams. But I think you're relying on the two signings hitting this year defensively in center back and D mid. But if you're getting decent performances from them, I do think this is a team that can contend for a home playoff game. I think they could fight for a four spot.
All right, you have any thoughts? 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. We'll get the mailbag in a second, but we are ranking by position as we do. I guess it's now a tradition. This is 2 years in a row. So D mids are today. This is a tough one. Just defining who is a defensive midfielder is a little bit tough. We didn't mention Alex Ringatung in that Austin FC preview because we were going to talk about him here, but you could argue that he's an 8. You could argue that a lot of these guys might be 8. You could argue Kellen Acosta's a 6, as Anders did in the pre-show meeting until he was blue in the face, but we overruled him because he has not yet been a consistent 6. He would have made this otherwise. Should we just read off our list and you guys can kind of explain? We'll go from 5 to 1 here. Actually, let's do the ones that didn't make it. Wow, we didn't. We snubbed Jack Price in the end. That's tough. Yeah, we snubbed Jack Price. I think if you're doing end of season or you're doing full career, you might take Federico Navarro of the Fire. Young Argentine D-mid, really talented player. But for now, you probably don't do it because he hasn't done an MLS just yet. Sebas Mendez didn't make this. Another guy who's like, is he a 6? Is he more of an 8? What's his role really in Orlando? Keaton Parks was on our list here, but he has played mostly as an 8, but has looked good as a 6. Dax was on the list. Gregorio was on the list. Arturo was on the list, but he didn't play last year. And I know I'll preempt you. Aaron Long we put on our center backs, but we'll do what we want, all right? Santiago Sosa also did not make this. So number 5, Jose Martinez. Dave, you demanded and Doyle acquiesced.
Nice.
That Jose Martinez make this list. Explain. El Brujo.
So I think he's the one guy on this list who's not an above average or elite passer, but I think he's as good a ball winner as anyone. And it pops out to me at the end of the year when they had all the missing pieces against NYCFC and still hung with them. He was a monster in that game, and he was a monster the entire playoff run. So we've seen him elevate his game in big moments. He churns up a ton of minutes for them, and he is the one person that plays that role. And as much credit as you can give to their center backs, he has to be a big part of their ability to cut out attacks early, to allow the other guys to press high up the field. He reads the game well in those moments. And in 2 years, he has consistently been one of the best D-mids in MLS.
What I love about him is that he believes he's an elite passer. Like, that's how you start off. He's like, oh, one guy that says he's not an elite passer. It's like, he doesn't think that's true. He's fun, and he's really good. I thought he got risk-reward wrong a lot last year. Certainly compared to 2020. But I also think that his ceiling might be as high as anybody on this list that we're about to go through.
Matt Polster is 4. Doyle, you are a big Matt Polster guy. Explain why he's on our top 5.
He was awesome because he was asked to play 1v3 in central midfield for like most of last season. And he did an amazing job of it. Not just defensively winning the ball, shielding the back line, but he is one of the best in the league at progressing the ball off the back line into the attacking third. His movement, he's so clever with his movement. He's always checking his shoulder and mapping the field. And then he has like really underrated skill on the ball to always make the first guy miss and then complete the simple pass upfield. He's a big part of why the Revs were seemingly always playing on the break. Like, they were always getting into transition because, like, 90% of the time, teams would come and try to, press and take the ball off of Polster. He would just make a miss and, just shuttle the ball forward and was off to the races for that attack. Really, like, wildly underrated player. That said, I do think that Bruce Arena really needs to think about changing the shape, getting him some help in there, especially in, like, you can stick with the 4-4-2 wide diamond, for a good chunk of the regular season, but against good teams, like against NYCFC in the playoffs or Columbus the year before, you can't have a guy go 1v3 in central midfield because no matter how good they are, they will, they will get the better of him, and that's what happened in the playoffs. But Polster absolutely, he was the second best defensive midfielder in the league last year.
From a personnel point of view, just swapping out Tejan for Leggett should help a little bit.
Yeah.
But Maciel was really good last year, and I thought he should have played a lot in that playoff game, and it would have helped them.
They need more from Trostison as well. Alex Ring at 3 on our list. This is a tweener weird one because I don't know that he's a 6. He probably won't be a 6. This year,
if he plays as a Will Trapp style 6, right, a guy who gets on the ball and drops deep and you split the defenders and you spray those long diagonals and you dictate the game, I think he can be he could have a best 11 caliber season. I think Alex Ring is that good. But Ring also throughout his career has been a guy who, he has been that good in the past. Look at how he played for that 2019 NYCFC team when he was, a full-time number 6 doing that, and they, ended up on 65 points. Like, he was awesome that year, and that's how I think he is best used. That said, he wears a number 8. He likes to get forward. With the arrival of Johan Valencia, who I think is maybe more of a true...
Johan, yep.
Is maybe more of a true defensive midfielder than Ring is. Maybe that's what happens. It's not how I would do it, if I was Josh Wolf. But either way, Ring has been a really good player in this league for 4 or 5 years now.
Unquestionable, the top 2, I think, here. Most people can predict, coming from the Pacific Northwest. Diego Chara is our number 2 defensive midfielder. And we joke sometimes about, hey, what secrets can we glean from Preki or from Atiba Hutchinson? What is in the water wherever Diego Chara lives in Portland? What is he doing individually? Does he just have an advantage on all of us genetically? I don't know. Whatever it is, it seems like he could play forever. And it seems like when the Timbers need him to be at his very best, he just
is. He was the best player on the field in MLS Cup.
Yeah, he just is. There's nothing more terrifying. You hear footsteps. I would feel like there's nothing more terrifying than an opposing player. starting a transition moment, you're like, I'm in the clear. And then you hear Diego Chara's breathing and footsteps behind you, and it's almost just like kick the ball out of bounds and reset.
And
it's not my ball anymore.
And it felt like with the emergence of Eric Williamson that his load was going to be a little bit easier, and that was going to be a part of this team. And I think Paredes is a really good ball winner, and he covers a decent amount of ground defensively. But when Williamson got hurt, it felt like Chara then stepped back up and was like, okay, fine, yeah, I can do this again, and continued it through the playoffs. And so it'll be interesting to see if Williamson can get back this year. you know, if they can manage Chara even more, I don't know, extend his career 12, 13 more years, possibly.
And number one, Joao Paulo. What a signing that has been. Doyle, do you, I mean, from day one, we talked about this guy. From CCL, it was just clear he was going to be a really good player in this league. Mm-hmm. I don't know that anybody predicted some of the things he did last year on an individual basis and some of the turnover that's happened in that midfield next to him. But, man, he is, he's just special to watch.
He was. He was, like, I had him neck and neck with Carlos Heel for MVP right up until the Sounders kind of skidded through October in the last month of the season. But he was like, he was really close to winning my MVP vote. And there aren't a lot of demons who have ever been that good. And his ability to do all the defensive work, but then also, you know, be a true regista dictating the game, get forward at times. Of course, he scored that golazo. But like he, you know, he's a playmaker when he gets forward. His dead ball service is excellent. Checked every box. Going to be interesting this year because I think it's back to the 4-2-3-1 for the Sounders. So I think on that two line, it'll be him and Christian Roldan together. I love Roldan going forward. I think he's so smart off the ball. But I wonder if they're going to make Roldan sit and allow Joao Paulo to go forward a little bit more. And then, of course, we would have to revisit this because if that's the case, then Joao Paulo is not actually a defensive midfielder. It's one of the things where the fluidity of the modern game has made it harder to pin down. Like, we should almost be breaking this down into, like, destroyers and registas because everybody plays with one of each now.
Yeah, and but the other thing is, if you're a pure destroyer, you're probably not on one of these lists because you have to be an overall around talented enough player to be top five. And like the requirement now is, if you are an elite destroyer, you are still a good passer, and you can still affect the game in possession. And that's the way the game has evolved. And I jammed Jose Martinez on this list because I'm old school and a dinosaur and wanted it and love what he does. But that's the reality of the league now, is you can go through and me and Anders were talking about some names before. We brought up Russell Canales and a few other guys where it's like, those are good players, but if they can't play both ways at an elite level, they're not on the top five list because guys like Alex Ring and Joao Paulo do exist.
We have a bunch of people who hit us up with snubs. Sebas Mendez was in that one. Judson Hive was freaking active, man. good Lord, you guys are all over these things. Polster, Keaton Parks, Navarro, people wanted. If he wasn't at Rangers, Roddy Russell Jr. says, would James Sands be on this list?
Oh,
if
yeah.
So, where?
I think Sands and Atuesta would both be on the list if they're still in the league. So, definitely change things.
All right, let's hit the mailbag. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Give us a couple good ones, Dave. We'll get out of here.
Person who would like to remain anonymous says...
Is that allowed? Like, why should somebody get to remain anonymous?
Because I asked.
If it's a good question, I'm good with
giving
it.
Giving person.
Like,
it said, should more teams invest one of the DP slots on a center back? They are one of the most important positions on the field and have the ability to help others on the back line. For instance, Carlos Cecito as a DP and Mavinga partnering him as a high-level TAM player.
In an ideal world, Salcedo wouldn't be a DP, right? Like, you would be signing him in a zone that you could buy him down. And I believe Bob Bradley refused. He was asked directly, could he be bought down? And Bob Bradley said, I don't want to talk about that. There's not a lot of DP center backs in the league. I think that makes sense. Like, we know what costs money and it's goals. And when you're competing with other teams, I think you're going to spend the DP dollars predominantly on goal scorers or chance creators. So I think it makes sense there's not that many DP center backs, personally.
Doyle, do you feel anything?
No.
Okay. I think it's a mistake because there are 27 teams in this league, and if you're not buying someone who's better than Joseph Martinez, what's your advantage over that team? And we have seen every team that has won MLS Cup over the last few years has an elite center back.
Yeah, but they're not DPs. So you were able to.
For sure. But how many teams are missing on TAM guys? And if you upped it that little bit more, would you be able to get...
But then you're missing potentially on a DP guy in that DP slot, no?
100%. And I think
that's a really important finite resource that you have to improve your team Now, look, they're missing on DP attackers too. Let's not pretend that's not happening. But
with the under 22 money now, and with Tam, I think you can go and get players who can be dangerous. For example, around a Reynoso, who's not a DP, but use that center back spot. This Carlos Salcedo thing is going to be interesting because I think it's going to be a bit of a test. Joe says, we used to play like Canada. I think we is the U.S. And we all got sick of it. We wanted a team that possessed and attacked. We got it. Sometimes teams like Canada win playing that way. But if we had few shots, none of the ball, and fouled our way through the game, USA fans wouldn't be proud. We now play much better. I'll take this. My son gets to watch the USA play soccer the way that I never did.
Hmm. Never is a strong word there, right? The U.S. definitely had some really compelling, aesthetically pleasing performances under Bradley and Arena. And even a few times back in the 90s, Steve Sampson had a couple of really good years, as did Bora. Greg Berhalter's trying to do something different with positional play. I like a lot of what I see of it. It does not spark joy, to answer Weeby's question from a week ago. But that has less to do with the tactical setup and more to do with the pace of play from the players. And I think that the real frustration that people have is twofold. One is that the system is complicated enough that it doesn't look like second nature for the players, so they don't push forward with the type of conviction that says, he didn't even have to think about this. He just knew where, he knew where it was. Like, it looks like they're remembering dance steps. I think that is the big issue for folks. And the second issue is that, like, they haven't been converting their chances. If Ferreira bags that early goal, right? If Pepe converts his chance against Jamaica and it's 2-0 instead of, 1-0, and then Jamaica, gets that laser bolt from Mikel Antonio, like, things, I think the sentiment would be different. And I should say there's a third thing. Like, Berhalter has been really rigid. It's been like 100% positional play throughout qualifying, even when, in certain games, it might have made more chance to throw a little, more sense to throw a little bit of caution to the wind and just like get it into the mixer. just go direct, put the Jamaican back line or the El Salvadoran back line under a ton of pressure and just overwhelm them with talent, which is not something that the U.S. under Berhalter has been willing to do. So I think that's where the frustration comes from. I'm not 100% with the guy who wrote in. What is his name?
Joe.
With our friend Joe.
Which we respect because he put his name on it.
Right. I'm not 100% with our friend Joe on this one, but I do understand where he's coming from. And I do think that if it clicks for this U.S. team, the upside is higher because of what's been instilled now.
How much of this is system holding players back, and how much of it is form holding the system back?
It's a really good question.
Because, like, who's in form, like, at club level? Like, Gio Reyna is supposed to be one of our best attacking players. He's hurt. Timothy Weah has been in and out as far as injuries go and in the lineup for Lille. But when he's on the field now, he looks really, really good. Pepe, not in form. Zardes, not playing. Ferreira, not playing. Sargent hasn't been in form. Pifok has been, but he hasn't been on the team lately. Pulisic, not in form. Aronson, not quote-unquote. I mean, he is, but he's not playing games this second, and he's not really a player that's going to go out and just create on his own. McKennie's in form now, but he wasn't, and he was out of the team. They pushed. He had, they sent him home. Musa, yes, but not really at club level. It's not like he's out there just, like, creating chances and scoring goals every week. Dest, in and out of Barcelona. Like, Robinson's in form for Fulham, and you see good stuff from him. But, like, our attacking players aren't in form.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and so it's hard to be like, your instinctual play, your, like, confidence in your abilities, your, don't think. Like, well, for now, it's probably hard for them not to think a little bit because it's not happening naturally for them every single week on the club side.
Yeah. No, I think that.
Hard to say, hey, go to the U.S. and just, hey, be the absolute best Christian Pulisic we've ever seen right now. And that's really hard.
Yeah, I think that that has been a big part of all of this. And you compare it to Canada, where, you know, Jonathan David is in even better form than he was in last year. And Kyle Larin is literally one of the best attackers in all of Turkey and is probably heading to, you know, a big five league for on a significant move in the summer. And, you know, Tejan Buchanan has hit the ground running literally in Belgium. And the U.S. attackers are not like that right now. So I do think that's a big part of it. I still think that the U.S. could play freer than they have been and be more effective than they have been, despite their lamentable club form mostly. If Berhalter took the shackles off a little bit, but that's just supposition on my part. And the other thing to understand here is, like, the players are still bought in. The players want to play this type of soccer. Like, they like the idea of being a team that gets 65% of the ball and dominates games with their skill and creates chances off their skill. And, like, everybody who saw the Euros last year wants to play like Spain. They don't want to sit and counter. They don't want to do what, you know, the France 2018 type of approach to the, like, they want to be the team that is pushing everyone, you know, whoever they come up against back and dancing through them and creating chances that way. So the players are still bought in, even though qualifying has been frustrating. And I think that is something to bear in mind as you watch this team, you know, in the final window, hopefully qualify for Qatar.
Full podcast up on the feed right now, summing up the final match day of this particular window in the octagonal. But food to chew on, food for thought, two sides of the apple. I don't know. We're out of here.
Thanks so much, everybody.
Everyone. We'll see you on Monday.